We're doing Pirkei Avot with the Jewish home. We're up to the fifth chapter, the fourth Mishnah. Arba midot ba'adam. There are four types of people. That's pretty encompassing. And whenever we approach Mishnayot like this, we have to realize that life is not all or nothing. Meaning, when it comes to every trait, we have certain aspects, we have more of this and less of that. We have certain days, we have certain times that we have more of this and less of that. It's not a all or nothing deal. Am I an angry person? Well, in some days, some minutes, some hours, some stages. Am I a calm person? Some days, some minutes. They asked Rav Aryeh Levine, is he one of the 36 hidden tzaddikim? So he said, sometimes. And sometimes you are. There are times when each of us should have times when we're one of those 36. Meaning, he seemed to say, it's not like there are these 36 where they're the constants for the world, but there are moments where you should be one of those 36. So when we speak about the four traits of humanity, the four types of approaches that human beings have to life and to their fellow men, as we will see the Mishnah, we have to realize that there are moments and there are different aspects to life. And what we're trying to develop is to have the right approach in more areas of our life and more times of our life. It's a balance. So the Mishnah says, Ha'omer sheli sheli v'shelcha shelcha. You have a guy who says, what's mine is mine, what's yours is yours. Zo midah beinonit. The first understanding says, that's mediocrity. You keep yours, I'll keep mine. I'm not interested in yours, but I'm not interested in giving you of mine. So, what? That's not so clear. So, one opinion says that's mediocrity. And one opinion says that's midat snom. What kind of person is that? That's what the Sodomites did. They said, I have enough food, so just don't come ask me for any, because I don't need your help, so I'm not going to help you either. You keep yours and I'll keep mine. You need something, don't come to me. That was what Sodom did. Sodom, the Sodomites, had the lavish area down near the Jordan, and they weren't lacking anything, so they didn't let any poor people come. Why should those collectors come trouble us? What? Okay, but
the problem was this. The problem is that they couldn't keep themselves a bit, you know. They were not so good people, generally. I think that their problem was that they were thinking that their city is theirs. The thing is what they were doing in that city.
Okay.
I mean, even here in Israel, we hear some people saying,
So that deserves a longer discussion. So the Rabbein Yonah has an interesting explanation to this Mishnah. Rabbein Yonah says this Mishnah is talking about a person who helps. He does tzedakah. It's not talking about what he does, it's talking about what he feels, what type of person he is. Meaning his action, he gives. He knows there's a mitzvah to give, so he gives. But as a human being, what he feels is, I shouldn't really be giving him. What's mine is mine, and what's his is his. Why do I have to help him out? And that one understanding says, you know, that's mediocrity. He doesn't feel for the other person, he doesn't really care for the other person. But he knows there's a mitzvah, so at least he does that much. And the other understanding says, no, that means there's an evil root to him, because in his nature he's so stingy, and he's not willing to help. If he doesn't help at all, that's a wicked person. That's not what we're talking about. But if he helps, only he feels like he doesn't feel for the other person. There's no emotion there. That's the question. How do we view that? The first opinion says that's mediocre. The other opinion says that's me, that's dumb.
What happens if you think in a different way? If you don't think that what's mine is mine, what yours is yours, you think that, I can mix them like this. What's mine can be yours,
Let's hear out the Mishnah. The Mishnah will get to that. The next type of person, says the Mishnah, says, Sheli Shelcha. What's mine is yours. Shelcha, Sheli. And what's yours is mine. Sometimes you could have, I could have, I could have, you could have. Says the Mishnah, Amaretz. That's a person who is just not learned, doesn't understand that I have to have mine, he has to have his. And I will give him from mine, and he will give me from his, but it's mine. And there are sometimes people like that. Sometimes you could have guests who help themselves to things that aren't on the table. So in other languages, that's called a thief. But somehow people think, if I'm your guest, then I'm entitled to a million other things. Who said? People go to a hotel, and they walk off with a towel. Did you pay for that towel? They walk off with the hangers. Did you pay for that hanger? So because it's in mass and they can't catch you, so that makes it okay? What's mine is his, what's his is mine. No. There's mine, there's his, and I have to be a kind person that when it's mine, I give him of mine. And Rav Hirsch on this Mishnah has a beautiful piece where he describes why communism can't work, why the system where there's communal ownership can't work. Because there has to be, says Rav Hirsch, a sheli. It has to be mine in order for me to make it available for you. And that's the final trait of the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, sheli shelcha v'shelcha shelcha. What's mine, I make available to you. And what's yours, well, that's yours. That's chassid. That's a pious person. Whereas a person who says, sheli, sheli, what's mine is mine. V'shelcha sheli, and what's yours is also mine. So that's rasha. That's already a wicked person. Now, this brings us to a very interesting point in marriage. How do we divide things in a house? My bank account, your bank account, my salary, my food, your food, my couch, your couch, my chair, my bed, your bed. So what are we doing here? There's a business partnership? My cereal, your cereal, my toothbrush, your toothbrush, my toothpaste, your toothpaste.
I think from experience, let's just forget about all of that. I tell my wife,
right? So where's the limit?
Take the bigger half.
Where's the limit? You understand there are my shoes and her shoes. But is it my robe and her robe? Is it my scarf and her scarf? Is it my car and her car? You understand this hits a very interesting point. My toothbrush, her toothbrush. What about my toothpaste, her toothpaste? So where are we going to draw the lines? Why don't you use Colgate like me? I want Crest. Why don't you use Crest like me? Okay, you can have your toothpaste, I'll have my toothpaste. But aren't we a couple? So this goes back to that point. Yes, in a normal relationship, I exist and you exist. After I exist and you exist, and we each have respect for one another's autonomy, then we can start sharing. But first I have to exist and you have to exist. There should be a door on the bathroom. Yes, and that door should be closed. You're laughing. No, I'm very serious. Meaning there are areas where this is me and this is you. And you have your privacy and I have my privacy. Now we're going to share. We're going to share life. So I recommend you share a bank account. I recommend you share on many, many fronts. But the sharing has to come out of a place of mutual respect. It can't come out of a place that says, we're married, so everything is everyone's. I'm going to use your toothbrush. And what happens if I'm uncomfortable about you using my toothbrush? I'm not abnormal. I'm entitled to have my sensitivities. And if I'm uncomfortable using the same nail cutter as you, so to one person that's anathema to use the same nail clipper. Another guy, one guy, that's disgusting. How could you use the same nail clipper? To another guy, that's normal. Every person keeps their own nail clipper. Why should I have your fungus on my toes? Okay, fine. that you can do whatever you want. You have to begin with respecting one another. It has to begin with you have yours and I have mine, and we're coming together to share. But it's we're sharing. This is mine and this is yours. Now, I don't think it should be my salary and your salary. I don't think it should be on that level, because realistically, what usually happens is there's an unfair balance. She's doing all the housework. You could be out there working because she's dealing with the kids. So what are you calling it your salary for? What is she, your maid? So pay her by now, or no problem. Pay her $75,000 for what she does. Because there's a statistic they check out every year. What is an average mother, housewife, what she does for the house? And on average, the value is $75,000. That's what you'd have to pay to have someone else do your laundry, clean the floors, clean the house, do your cooking. No, you're not saying that. So no, we're partners. But that partnership doesn't erase our personal sensitivities. There are going to be things that people are uncomfortable sharing, and we have to respect that. We don't enter marriage and say, that's it, now you're mine, it's over. It doesn't work that way. We share, but part of sharing is that we give. Now, we should try to approach it with a desire to make everything available to the other person, everything that we're comfortable with. But it has to be where we're comfortable. Not that we have this ideal and so this is the way it should be. People sometimes get very offended. I'm willing to eat from her bowl of soup and she's not willing to eat from mine. I'm willing to eat her leftovers, she's not willing to eat mine. Or vice versa. We go to a restaurant and I'm willing to let her eat from my plate, she's not willing to let me eat from hers. I recommend that people should overcome certain sensitivities if they bother their spouse, but we should also be respectful. What? Yeah, we don't become one overnight. We're new at this, and it begins with, like Rav Hirsch points out, first there's mine. Okay, now we're coming into the together, and we're a little short on time. Uriah, I just want to finish this, and we'll get back to you. But this can go to places that are unfair and improper in a marriage. Whose name does the house get put in? Whose name does the bank account go in? Whose name does the car go in? Whose name does the debt go in? So you have to work with trust. Part of trust is that things that are positive we share. And sometimes it's worthwhile. Some people put the business in their wife's name because they don't pay taxes. Fine. I'm not coming to give you practical advice on how to set up your businesses. But at the end of the day, from a realistic perspective, we have to approach it with A, respect for one another's sensitivities, but B, an approach of sharing. So when it's not an issue of sensitivities, when it's a question of my bar of chocolate versus your bar of chocolate, so then it should be our bar of chocolate. If I went out and I didn't have the brains to buy two popsicle sticks, then it's our popsicle stick. What? And don't go telling me I'm sensitive to that. Yeah, I understand. So cut it in half if you're so sensitive. No problem. What kind of stick? Ice cream. Popsicle stick. So if you were smart enough, you bought two. But if you didn't, then it's our popsicle stick. And if you have a sensitivity to that, then you lost your popsicle stick. So I'm taking a small example, but it's a big example. I don't have an issue if, he has a car that he drives to work and she has a car that she drives to work. I have an issue if her car breaks down and he says, sorry, honey, go deal with your car. It's my car. You go deal with your car. No, that's not a sensitivity. That's about, let me keep my own. No. When it's not a sensitivity, when it's not out of respect for the other person's sensitivity, so that's where we should approach things with togetherness.
What if you actually ding their car enough, say, you don't want to give it to drive your car because you're afraid you'll ding your car, do you even pick up your key?
First of all, what does the word ding mean? I don't know.
Ding, like the dent. Little dents, like, oh, the supermarket trolley ran into the car. Oh, oops, I scraped across the fence a little bit. Oops, I bumped into the sidewalk and, chucked up the tires.
I'll tell you. I think that the answer to that question lies in a few points. Point number one, how does she take it? So the question was asked, what happens if you have a car and you both get new cars, but you see that within 3 weeks her car has all kinds of dents and scratches and scrapes and your car is still perfect, and now you don't exactly want to let her drive around in your car. So I would ask a few questions. Is it just a preference? Number one, how important is it to you? Number two, how important is it to her? Meaning, sometimes the intelligent way to achieve things is not to lay them on the table. Meaning, if what you say is, I trust you, you're wonderful, you're a great driver, just not in my car.
Yeah,
so you understand that's not going to get you very far. But if what you say is, look, I got to run out to work, and I have all my papers in the car, and I have things set up, and I have the pass for the parking in the car, meaning sometimes you could set things up in a way that you can avoid the conflict and achieve the same thing you wanted. My cell phone is set up with the speaker in there, and this way I could make...
You make a dent, you pay for it.
You better pray that girls aren't listening to this.
I would like to drive well, and I trust you, my car was safe.
So I think that assuming the scenario is such that you care a lot and you have not found an intelligent way to attain what you want without addressing it directly, meaning you haven't found that excuse of making your cell phone only fit to the dibulit of that car, you haven't gotten a parking pass that only works there, you haven't set up some kind of mechanism to intelligently achieve that goal without saying it overtly. So then you're faced with the following question. How much will it hurt her feelings if you say something? And then you have to ask yourself. Someone gave me a beautiful allegory, mamash, 15 minutes ago, when we took our break for water. So someone told me when they're faced with a mitzvah, they sometimes tell themselves, if I were paid 1,000 shekel, would I go do that mitzvah? And then they say, if I would do it for 1,000 shekel, then I'm doing it right now. So I say the same thing. A person has to ask himself, for 1,000 shekel, would I hurt her feelings? Meaning, what are her feelings worth to me? If you're really thinking about it in advance, yeah, I don't want her to make dents in my car, right? And I know chances are she's going to drive it. It's not going to come back the way it went out. Fine. But what's it worth to you? So I know you posed the question to me, but I'm posing the question back to you. I think that it's fine. You could think about how to achieve it without hurting her feelings. But now you're asking me, what should you do in a scenario where you don't have much of a choice? So I'll throw the question back at you.
Very Jewish.
Okay. So let's go back. Let's go back to the Mishnah. So the Mishnah tells us a level of piety is when a person can say what's mine is yours and what's yours is yours. And we stressed Rav Hirsch's point on this Mishnah that it has to begin with being mine, meaning I say what's mine is yours. And we also mentioned that certain things are not really mine. It's not fair to say the salary is mine. It's not yours. Yeah, you're the breadwinner. Big deal. She's the one dealing with the kids. You wouldn't be out there being the breadwinner if she weren't dealing with the kids. If she didn't do a million things, that you wouldn't have the time to work if she weren't doing the shopping and all the other things. So I don't think that's fair to take certain things and say, that's mine, just because you're the one accomplishing it, because she's accomplishing things that allow you to accomplish it. And you have to be real and realize that we're in a partnership here. So we said, there are sensitivities which we should respect by one another. Just because we're married doesn't mean everything becomes ours. Certain things, she's entitled to have her sensitivities. If she has her sensitivities, let's say you don't like that she uses your shaver, so fine, she should respect that. She doesn't like that you use her shaver, you should respect that. She uses a comb she doesn't want you to use, respect it. She's entitled. There are sensitivities that I think we have to respect, even if it means nothing to you, it means something to her. But then there are things that are really ours. It's not mine and hers. It's not my bag of milk. She went out and bought it. Very good. So you're the one that likes coffee and cereal in the morning. It's our bag of milk. If everything is ours, the bank account is ours. And a person has to be prepared for that. I've heard all kinds of weird thoughts. People say, I better buy a house before I get married, so I have it in my name, not our name. You know, all kinds of interesting things. No, you're getting married, you're getting on that diving board, and you're jumping in with both feet. You're jumping in to be together and to build life together. So a person has to approach it with that. It's ours. We're building together. And from that togetherness, we will attain much more than either one of us could have attained alone. Now, you'll ask me, what do you do when a spouse, and it could be a husband or a wife, has a bad habit? They max on the credit card. They spend all the savings. That's an issue, and that has to be dealt with. I'm not saying that there aren't situations that deserve certain specific remedies. There are. Sometimes you have to figure out specific remedies for specific situations, and that's something that has to be thought about. But the general approach is, first of all, there's mine and hers. I do respect her autonomy. And second of all, we are in this together, and so things in the house are ours. It's not my sofa. You keep your feet off my sofa. That's my bed. No. So there's the cover that you like. You've had it since you were six. Very good. Now it's our cover. Figure it out. If she's fine with you sticking to your cover, fine. And if not, then it's our cover. It's not going to fit. Okay. Take turns. Now you're going to say, hey, this is sounding childish. And I have news for you. Most quarrels between couples are childish. Mm-hmm. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. No, you didn't. Yes, I did. You did not fill the car with gas yesterday. Yes, I did. You did not do the last diaper. Yes, I did. Aren't you being childish? Aren't you? Laila Tov.